who would like to begin?
I've been looking forward to this for 6 months. I'm Susan.
Oh, nice.
Hi, Susan. Emailed you.
Can everyone hear,
like,
or should I use the microphone?
You?
I'm sorry.
I'd like to help continue the...
Are you talking to the mic?
Well, let's anyway, right?
They always tell me, and I'm loud.
Well, I'm Susan. I'm very motivated to grow this program as yours, but I don't care. I still believe, you know, we have the same beliefs. And my background is vocational, and I'm starting a program on vocational, and I'm thinking, where do I start? But this is really going to be, would be a great tool to have to start my vocational program to help people understand that employing handicapped people is not expensive, not a bad idea. It's a good idea. Are your slots on the website, or?
I'll make sure that you have them.
Sure.
Okay,
well,
yes, I will share.
All right, because like the communication slide was important to me.
Absolutely, I'll share those.
Communication about work.
Absolutely.
Thanks.
Yeah, absolutely. So you are doing work in terms of employment?
Well, I want to work with finding, with being a job developer. I've done it for years and I stopped.
Right.
And I think this is a really good resource. Churches, you don't necessarily think of churches as being
right.
employers, but each person has a job, well,
right.
most people. And that would be a great resource to find people. And I don't think over all your time, but.
No, that's good, but the point should be made too that a lot of research has shown that people with disabilities make really good employees. There's research to support that their attendance rates
yeah.
are
oh, yeah.
higher, that they are very motivational to other employees. There's a
yeah.
lot of data to support.
There's also research to prove that we only have 17% of employment.
It makes good business sense to hire people with disabilities.
Thank you, Courtney. My name is Elizabeth Soto, and I'm part of the FUAN, and I too believe in FUAN.
Yes.
Yes.
I love you.
In the last couple of years, we have enticed the Friendship Community, which is an organization here in the county, and related with the Mennonites, actually. And they have come into one of our chapels, run their beautiful choir. I don't know, several of us just moved by their choir, and they've come to our churches as well to perform and share. They have the beautiful mall. Their mission is impacting the world with capacities. That's so beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And so they have great people working at their website. We have been trying to recruit the students that will want to engage that type of ministry in the last 3 years, and I have not had any takers, but I still am hopeful. We have had Milton Stilfels wanting to be one of the supervisors for our students. It hasn't worked, but hopeful that could be. I just want to encourage, I think this is an important work that our students should get involved. And I want to witness for Lancaster Theological Seminary, we have an alum, Mark Perkins. He came from another seminary a few years ago. He has this beautiful story, I'm not going to tell him for him, in which how Lancaster Theological Seminary, when he transferred here, gave him options that he didn't have before. But I just want to leave it there, approach him, and he can share. But I think as a seminary, we've been trying to include our student body. And there is what we call the disabilities in the invisible. And I'm so glad that Dr. Colvin had the courage to start with us. But those are the invisible ones, the ones that we don't understand, and we just are, it's hard for us academically to accommodate to some of those. So thank you for sharing the story and being vulnerable.
Thank you. You know, I mean, the fact that you have a Disability Awareness Week and that you raise awareness about this is huge here. I love Vanderbilt Divinity School, but I never heard the word disability in my entire program when I was there. I found, work in disabilities after I graduated. So I applaud Lancaster for having a commitment to this issue. It's a big deal. And not a lot of seminaries are devoting themselves to that, so.
Hello, hi, my name is Zoe Campbell. I'm one of the students here. I was wondering if you did much work, or if your colleagues did any work with people who have emotional development problems, but it's actually based on nurture, that like the parents or the churches or the schools weren't there for them. And so do you count that as a disability? Do you work with that, or is that not in your scope?
So it's not necessarily in the scope of what we do at the Kennedy Center. We don't work a lot with people who have mental illness or anything like that. Certainly, and we don't do a lot of individual counseling with congregation. We just don't have the staff support with that. But we do have trainings and conferences, and I think I mentioned that a divinity school student had helped us to do a conference, and she was really interested in issues of mental illness and recruited a speaker to address some of those issues for us. But that's not something that I have a lot of expertise.
So you don't work with like abusive cases, right?
I don't.
And then just another question, just in general, I was wondering about. Did you get much into how the young people or just different people see God? Do they see God as, do they trust God? Or do they think that, like, because of what they were taught, that that maybe they can't, because maybe God's just mental because, you know, because they have this problem?
Well, the young people we talked about this, who in the flourishing study had great understandings of God and celebrations, and it may have been, you know, a lot of, you know, most of the people who we surveyed, you know, attend church once a week.
Yeah.
And so it's definitely not a clear picture. And then I told you that one story about that family who may have had a different kind of picture of God, who wasn't maybe as supportive of God. So definitely the people we've worked with have had that that they embrace a good understanding of what it means for that. But I want to be clear that really the work that we do is not focused on theology. We leave the theology to the congregations, and then we really just try to bring the disability supports to them. And so it's a good partnership to kind of meld those two.
Okay, thank you.
And of course, you are already aware and sure that the environmental factors, DSM-4, now DSM-5, does include environmental deficits. I think it's Axis 2, if I recall correctly. Many in the prison system presented with Axis 2 environmental disabilities, so that is definitely environmental deprivation. So that's a huge one that you've identified, the environmental, maybe not born with a such and such a quote-unquote disability, but the environmental factors so debilitating that DSM-5 does recognize that as one of their axes, and I think it's axes too. It's been a while to go back and do research.
Thank you, Courtney. I appreciate your presentation. My name is Santa, and I am the mother of an adult child with a learning disability. And it's one of those disabilities very much like your own. If you don't know, you don't know that she has it. And so life has been difficult and challenging at times. I was able to help her get an associate degree in law enforcement. Unfortunately, she's too scared to use it. So we're working on that part. I had two questions. The first question is, I did see in your slide where some of the employment opportunities for your participants was with Goodwill. We have a very active Goodwill program here in Lancaster, also United Disability Services and Triber, which used to be Easter Seals. So I'm wondering how were those agencies contacted to be part of your study, and was there any type of collaboration between the church and the agencies to provide services or even answer some of your surveys and questions?
We definitely have relationships with disability organizations across the state, and I don't know exactly how that particular job connection was made. That wasn't the congregation I worked in. Yes, I know who it was. So he actually was empowered to go and apply himself. So he saw, this was actually in a store, and so he saw a job one day. He was experiencing homelessness and had some different types of disabilities, and he actually took it upon himself. He was empowered by the Putting Faith to Work Project and took it upon himself to apply for this job at Goodwill and saw a sign in the window. And he got the job, but he started working in the warehouse. So even though we do have connections, that was actually him. He did that. He was empowered to do that on his own. But we certainly reached out to organizations if we weren't able to find employment connections within the congregation. Because it's a pilot, our individual people were on the teams, and so we also could think creatively about how to reach out. But once the grant is over, which kind of officially is, the teams we faith and support, and so they're going to need to, branch out on their own and make those connections. But he made that connection. So it is, you know, but there are, when you use Think Creatively, there are disability organizations like the Kennedy Center and like the one at Temple University and the Arts and the Easter Seals and those things that can help you to think about where there might be good places for someone. And creating those one-page job profiles, you know, it's a great way to introduce somebody. So you can say, you know, this person is really good at this, they have experience in this. They may not interview that one, you know, as well as you'd like, but they have all of these strengths and skills, and would you, you know, consider them for employment? So that's a really great way to approach employers too, is with that kind of information. But yeah, but Goodwill, Beth, he did that himself.
Thank you. Really quick, my other question was, you touched on this just a tiny bit, but I had another question. You talked about the components of ethnicity with certain percentage white, certain percentage black. Now, when you did your research on the church participation, did you have separate data of how that broke down ethnically? Like how much of the participation was amongst the black community? What does that look like?
We did not look at that, but it certainly is there and could. And we should. Like I said, that we're still looking at the data and getting new information from it every day. There's a lot of it, but we have not looked at that. Why do you ask?
Because I attend a predominantly African-American church. And so I was wondering what the data may have looked like in that environment. I know that I don't think consciously my church does it, but I know that we have members who have disabilities that sing on the choir and participate in other areas. So I was just wondering what that might have looked like. Okay, thank you.
Just for clarification, it is access for psychosocial and environmental problems.
Thank you, Courtney. I loved in the beginning that you almost right away mentioned that whole intersectionality piece between faith and where faith intersects with almost everything that could have to do with disabilities and differently abled people and every kind of category. I was curious, just for clarification purposes, you started almost in the very first slide mentioning, because some of us had lived and worked in Philadelphia, and you mentioned almost right away University of Philadelphia, which I think you either mean Philadelphia University or University of Pennsylvania or Temple or all three to find field info. That's what I want to clarify.
Yes, Temple University is the University Center for Excellence.
Okay.
And let me see. Maybe I just kind of glossed over it. I think it's the University of Pennsylvania.
Yes, I was thinking that's where. And would you say that would be a place to? They've already compiled research of different kinds of field ed connecting.
Now,
is that what you meant?
So
field ed piece.
All of the intellectual research centers and all of the university centers. So the Temple University, they all look different. So not every, you said, is committed to the issue of faith and disability. And they all have different areas of emphasis. So we're all working in different areas in terms of how to support people with disabilities. So you would really need to, I didn't see anything. I actually did look and I didn't see anything at the USED in terms of faith and disability. And they're certainly not members of our collaborative. But that doesn't mean it's not happening. That doesn't mean there's not an interest there. And so that's why I encouraged you to reach out, because like us, until some parent or somebody came to us and said, would you work on this? We weren't working on it. Mm-hmm. And so it takes somebody to go in and say, hey, I'm interested in this. I'd like to help you work on this. And then you never know what could happen. But the one at Temple, I would think, would be more because it's a university center of excellence. And that's where we kind of worked on quality of life issues within that funding stream. They might be more likely to work on something like that.
We have time for two more questions.
Oh, perfect. Okay.
One, two, or maybe three.
I'm curious regarding, you said that during your seminary journey, you didn't really hear the word disability. And so with the Divinity School right there, I'm curious, has there been any collaboration since to possibly have something in the curriculum? Is that something you're looking at possibly with other Divinity Schools? So just kind of trying to figure out what's going on there.
Mm-hmm. I mean, since, you know, we developed a relationship with Field Ed, we started, you know, more and more students, and since there was an opportunity, more and more students started coming, you know, forward and saying, I have an interest in this issue. They had a course 2 years ago that I helped to co-facilitate on disability and religion. They don't have a formal component of their curriculum, and they don't have faculty on, you know, they don't have people who are formally interested in this topic. I'm trying to talk Eric. He's in the Department of Special Education. I'm trying to find ways to like send him over there to teach, and maybe they can buy some of his time. But definitely students have, they've started in the students there. It hasn't necessarily shown up in the curriculum, but the students have had more of an interest. And there's this one student in particular who I'm thinking about who, they did not have ramps, right, to a lot of their buildings, and you guys understand that. And so he actually borrowed a wheelchair and filmed himself navigating the entire Divinity School, the external perimeter, the every single classroom, every bathroom, and just filmed himself, you know, unable to get up, most of the times even get in the building. And then he shared that with the faculty. And so there are ramps now. And so there's a lot of, because, you know, students, I think, you know, you guys, you can, you know, have an impact. And so there are a lot of students who are standing up. And another student actually started a student organization that focuses on disabilities within the Divinity School. And so there's a little bit of movement. And I know there is more of an interest, but mainly the collaboration has been on field ed instead of courses.
Thank you so much again. And you're touching base on more than one area that is really something of interest to me and inspiring and everything. I'd like to talk with you a little more about that, but a question that I have related to religious leadership and some of the conversations you've had in your research. Have you met anyone with a disability who has shared their calling to vocational ministry, being like, say, a pastor of a congregation? And if so, is this person already serving in a ministry of some kind, or have you met with a congregation contacted the center for consultation on interviewing a potential candidate who just so happens to have a disability? Would this serve as a red flag, a reason for them not to hire them, as in some scenarios that I'm familiar of? I was just curious if you've ever come across this in your research and your work.
Well, I'd love to hear about your experiences later, but not in this research, no. But you know, there was one young person who has an autism spectrum disorder who took it upon himself to. He didn't have the formal training, but he would hold services in his family's home every Sunday, and he would invite his neighbors to come and attend, and they would come. And so he would preach, and he was sort of fulfilling a bit of vocational calling informally. And that was really exciting. He loved doing that. And so that is someone who participated in our study that we talked with. But I don't and have not worked with and have not been contacted, actually, by anyone who is interested in more formal ministerial training who have a disability. I have not. No one has contacted me on that. It's certainly, I'd love to talk with you and hear more, though. But I don't have any experience.
We're going to close. It's just an addition. Two of the individuals that I know pastoring with disabilities, it's interesting that they came to their pastor. When they came to their pastor, they did not have a disability. In one case, a Presbyterian minister, and I always say Lebanon or Lebanon. I have so much difficulty. That's a vain. You work in Lancaster. Give me a break. Okay. So this young lady, minister, Presbyterian church, is a cyclist, and she was hit by an automobile while she was cycling and had some brain trauma. Another individual we had here a couple years ago as a speaker now is in a wheelchair, but and he also continued pastoring after his injury and disability. So it was interesting, but it's just an interesting question. I guess it could take it a lot of ways. Let's thank Courtney Taylor for coming all the way from Tennessee.